Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema. Season 2.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
A fragrant fat is a first-class lunch.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Paprika. This is a 2006 film directed by Satoshi Kon and stars Megumi Hayashibara, Toru Omori, and Katsunosuke Hori. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. When a machine that allows therapists to enter their patients' dreams is stolen, all hell breaks loose. Only a young female therapist, Paprika, can stop it. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Oh dear, dear diary. Oh dear, dear diary.
Paprika, Paprika, where have you been? You have seen so much inside people's dreams. Paprika, Paprika, what did you do? I tried to follow, but I don't have a clue. Blurring the lines between false and reality, a device designed to improve people's sanity. A small invention, the DC Mini. Clip to your head like a small fashion thingy. Frogs and letterboxes, randomness galore. You can't prepare for what is in store. Massive big heads, a parade of the strange. What is real, what is not, this film is deranged.
Oh dear, dear diary.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Inception is inspired by Paprika.
I did get the feels.
Yeah.
Quite quickly, quite early on, and I instantly had to stop the film and then go and have a little Woogle Google to see if Nolan was a bit influenced by it because of the madness.
See, I do, in hindsight, wish I read this fact before choosing the film, because I know you're not the biggest Inception fan. And if I'd known that this film was like Inception on steroids, I may have not picked it.
I'd say it's more Everything Everywhere All at Once, sort of. The similarities are more akin to that. It's not like I don't like it. I can see Inception is a wonderful film to look at. For me, Inception was always, if you've got the Matrix, do I need this? You get plugged into something, you go into sort of a dream reality, a virtual reality. I know that there'd be the nerds out there that find the fine lines and the differences between the two. But for me, I was very like, this is kind of already Matrix for me. Might be a moronic statement, but for me, yeah, I've always struggled with the hype of Inception. I fall more in line with South Park's view of Inception, Inception.
Yeah.
I think their little segment on it is where I come from.
Do you just think that's a result of you being more into your reality? You're more into the depiction of realism and true life rather than accepting these mad high concept films that take a lot out of you to sort of follow?
I think I'm anti-meta. So you can sell me a cave troll and Lord of the Rings, and you can sell me space fantasies and stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, you have conversations like about Interstellar and the space-time continuum and reality and E equals MC squared. I got that right, didn't I?
Somewhere.
That I can jive with. But when people talk about a dream within a dream within a dream, I'm like, it's too far beyond comprehension. Yeah. And people that say, oh yeah, but it's subtext. It's subtext for conservative society. It's subtext for racial issues. It's like, I'm like, yeah, well,
yeah,
I don't care.
Me. Yeah.
I don't care.
I'd say you're a fan of fantasy, but it seems like we've done a few episodes on films that are clearly not your cup of tea. And I don't know what your thoughts are on this film, but if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say you're not a huge fan. But fantasy, you're a yes man for. But when it's just madness upon madness, maybe it's just not your sort of vibe.
I think meta's the word for me. I think anything meta, like Everything Everywhere, Inception's probably the better of these three. If I was to say Paprika, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Inception, at least Inception's got some stars that I can, as in actors, a great director, it's got things I can still jive with. But Paprika and Everything Everywhere All at Once, I'm just like, it's just madness. It's kind of like Carrick's films, like Annette and But they're like highbrow, high not what would you call it? Sniff your own fart films.
Yeah, that's the official category. That's whereas what it's called.
Whereas I don't think Paprika and everything are sniff your own farts. They're more like, I think every director also, I think the director of this film, Paprika, said, I want you to walk away only knowing, understanding 70% of it, and you fill in the rest. I hate that. I fucking hate that sort of approach to directing.
Yeah.
I think you're robbing your audience of potentially a great story because you want to walk away with your fist up.
Yeah.
Like you left the last great mystery, like who built the pyramids? The Egyptians did.
Yeah. I mean, credit where credit's due. You are on a singular track with your standpoint on these sort of films, and it's fair to say that meta isn't better for you.
Oh.
The tall and short bartenders on Paprika's website are voiced by director Satoshi Kon and the original author of the Paprika novel, Yasutaka Tsusui, respectively.
I never could have...
You don't even know who those characters are in the film, do you?
I know who they are in the film.
Okay.
Because it reminded me very, very much of Jack Torrance sitting at the bar in The Shining.
Yes, I did think
that. The imagery of it. The low levers, the dark, what's it called? Well, you know, you can get a captain's chair and it's in green leather. It's a very old school chair, but there's one, it's like ox blood. Like the way it's, the colouring of it all is very shining.
Okay.
So I've actually looked at that scene a lot more.
Do you think it was a homage to Shining? Because it feels like this film is as mad and as crazy as it is, there are certain parts of it that feels like it is an ode to cinema. It's from a love letter from a director paying homage to other films that he loved. It feels like that because in various points in the scenes, in various dream sequences, it's sort of like playing out like a movie, isn't it? Like a genre of film. So you have your mystery, you have your crime, you have your fantasy and all of that.
Well, they even talk about the technicalities of filmmaking within the film. And Paprika, whether she's real or not, I still couldn't tell you, is a huge film fan.
Mm.
So absolutely, yeah. You can't not make a film like this, really, and not have had some influence.
When Paprika interviews Konakawa in his filmmaker guise, his mannerisms and appearance resemble that of Akira Kurosawa.
Hmm? Yeah.
I know the director. I've only seen, I think, one or two of his films. I know he's an absolute legend of filmmaking. I couldn't tell you what he looks like or his mannerisms. That's probably a fault on my part.
Hmm.
But I don't know if you picked up that. I don't know if you saw anything Akira-ish.
Not one piece. No. Nope. Because it's animated.
Yep.
I wouldn't have.
No.
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Before we go into the like section, I think I should mention, I don't know how this episode's going to go. Mm-hmm. I think this may be one of, if not the hardest film to do a fucking podcast on.
Absolutely.
Because at least with Everything Everywhere All at Once, you can talk about the performances. You can talk about how it...
Prior performances.
Yeah, you can talk about the filming choices, the director's choices with this one. I don't even know, man. So I'll let you start. If you've got anything you liked about Paprika?
Actually, I'm going to go back on what you just said.
Oh?
I can't believe I had to sit through another sort of Everything Everywhere All at Once sort of film. I can't believe you did that to me.
Yeah, look, I said it to you before we started recording. I'm sorry, man.
I'm glad I watched it.
I'm sorry, man. But listen.
I'm glad.
We are a podcast that tackle every film of every genre, whether we like it, loathe it, or just meh it. And see. I think, you know, Asian animation is something we haven't done yet. So it's good to dip our toe in. If I'd known what this film was before suggesting it for an episode, particularly with you, would I have done it? Probably not.
Mm.
But what did you like about the film?
Attention to detail.
Okay.
So if a 60-stone man sits in the back of a car, then that car will slump and sit heavy when viewed from outside the vehicle. And this happens in the film. And it was really funny because you see this huge guy early on in the film. What's his name? Haruro?
I couldn't tell you someone any else. Names.
That's someone
Tanoki?
Else.
Tanoki?
It is Tanoki. Yes, Tanoki.
Takita?
Maybe.
The fat dude, I think.
The huge man.
Yeah.
Huge man gets stuck in the elevator at the start. Anyway, they discover that something's been stolen, the DC Mini from the lab. And then it cuts to a scene they're on their way to Hiruro's apartment, the guy who they think's gone AWOL. And it's an outside shot of the car. You can't see inside the car from the first shot. And the car slumped at the back. And I instantly thought, oh, the fat guy's sitting in there. And I thought, I appreciate that. I thought, that's kind of cool that they had the know-how to think, if that guy's sitting in a car, that car's fucked.
Do you know what I love?
What?
That your first like in a film of absolute nonsense madness is an air of reality.
Physics.
Yeah. You like, I like fat guy make car sink.
Yeah.
And I like that. I appreciate that. Because again, it tracks. That's one thing I like about you, is one week you're not saying, I can't stand these sort of mad onslaught of meta movies. The next week you're like, I really enjoy it. You follow a singular narrative. And as a simple, pure boy like myself, I applaud you and appreciate you for it.
Thank you. And it's not like I don't love hard reveals or difficult stories. It's not like I don't love them, but I think there's real stories out there that are difficult to follow, but not trying to push the boundaries of understanding. It's not like, whereas it's true. If people ever suggest for us to watch this extremely meta film to wind me up, it's going to work. So send them in.
Yeah.
And you're just going to get me in a mood.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm very much of the standpoint, like the higher the concept, the better, the more outside crazy thinking a film's narrative is, I'm there for. But saying that, I also want to be able to understand what's going on.
Mm.
Like I love strapping myself in for a really mad ride, but at the end of it, I can be like, that was crazy. It meant this. Why films like this don't work for me as much as it does for others is that I do have one foot in your camp of being like, well, I do want to know what's going on, because why am I wasting my time watching it otherwise? Mm. And that's why Interstellar, as much of a fantastic film it is, and it's not comparable to this film, really. They're two completely different concepts, but there's large parts of that film that I don't understand. And that's what stops it from being an absolute top 10 favorite of all time of mine. But I think less so, I don't know, I guess with me, if it's taking me on a ride and I understand the ride, I'm all there for it. If I don't understand the ride, I want to get off.
Okay.
And I think that's where I sit definitely with this film.
I think where it's difficult, more so with Paprika than it was Everything Ever All at Once, is that the points of reference are difficult already because it's a Japanese film. So it's a film where you're reading the text. You don't even know if the text has been transcribed correctly, like the translation.
Yeah.
There was a few lines in this film where I thought, I don't know if that's translating correctly.
Yeah.
So you're already in a difficult position when you're watching a foreign film. I love foreign films, but it's difficult. It's Japanese culture. It's something we don't have as much in common with. So you're already got to learn that experience. But then when you throw the madness in as well, you've been removed from it by about two or three steps.
Yeah.
So much harder to find connection or value for yourself. And obviously, I don't want to upset people who love this film. I know it's revered. I was looking at a lot of comments on people who were commenting on this gentleman's video on YouTube because he put Paprika is shit. And I didn't Google that. I did Google that. No, I didn't really. But I wanted to see other people's opinion. And the comment, this guy literally got called an idiot, didn't watch the film properly.
Yeah.
They just attacked him because he said, I just think it was a bit ropey, a bit naff. It's got one character arc, and it's got loads of character arcs, and they were just shooting him down. And I thought, okay, there's a really passionate crowd out there that love this film.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and wind them up.
Well, of course, that's your job.
Second, go for it. I'll give this dog one. So early in the film, the chief doctor's meltdown and subsequent music video that is being led by a fridge and all sorts of bric-a-brac on a parade of madness is actually an attack on the senses. The music that goes with it's really striking and strange. I did like the music. And when I listened carefully, it almost sounded like Golden Brown.
Yeah.
I kind of liked it. I started singing with it and I started getting into it.
Yeah.
And this parade is called, it's a motif. It occurs a few times in the film. And each time I sort of found myself looking for like a new section of it.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's got loads of depth.
Yeah, it's mad. I've seen the film twice and you notice so many different things on each view.
Yeah, it's going over hills and shit. And there's something, and the music that goes with it and the walk, it's like, it's really cool. It's like, it's almost like that New Orleans death walk when someone's died and they got all their trumpets out and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're rolling down the street. Now, I really enjoyed that scene.
Yeah.
And the first time you see it is when the chief doctor, he's this really short guy. That's another thing, actually. The variation in characters. You've got a really short guy with a really large head. You've got a really narrow Japanese woman. You've got a huge fat guy. You've got a very standard looking guy. It's like lovely variation in physical beings. And I really enjoyed that section, but I didn't understand it. But I like it.
Yeah, I think that music you speak of, I think it perfectly summarizes dreams. Because dreams are mad. Nightmares are mad.
Boom,
the mental aspect that you've shut down for the night, you're on charge, and your subconscious decides to make a mad story, a mad little film within your head that may make no sense.
Mm.
And then you forget it within 24 hours. That is crazy. And I think that music does a really good job of sort of summing that up.
It does. It's a great portrayal of a dream.
Yeah. And that scene, I mean, the film starts pretty sharp. sharp and quick. And that scene you speak of that runs concurrently throughout the film of, like you say, a parade of madness that only grows in scale, grows in stature with more and more madness added to it.
Mm.
When I first saw that with the music, I was like rubbing my hands together. I was like, okay, this is going to be great. This is going to be mad. And like you, I see a lot of people highly lauding this film. I thought, oh my God, I'm so excited to watch this.
Mm.
But like you, I don't like not understanding things. So
yeah.
Despite how impressive it looks, despite how certain scenes are really striking, certain musical pieces are really good, if at the core I don't really know what's going on, it does distance me from the piece.
Well, see, I don't mind not understanding things. Like if someone says to me, here's a maths equation and it's been solved, there's the answer. But how did we get to that answer? And I'm like, I'm just not good enough at maths. Whereas if this director purposely left out 30% of its understanding,
yeah,
then I'm trying to learn something that cannot be learned.
So you don't have a problem with it if you can't understand it, but you do have a problem with it if it can't be explained. And I think that's fair. So like you, I'm shit at maths, but I understand there's maths geniuses, math wizards that can do the most complicated of sums, and I find that impressive. If they can explain it to me, I still might not understand it, but I take comfort in the fact that, well, it is doable. It is solvable, and I get that.
Well, if you can verify the sources, so if there's ways to verify the answer, it's written down in textbooks and that, then you know at least what you were watching is understandable to someone. I just wish there was more explanation as to why I'm witnessing what I'm witnessing.
Yes.
What's the worst dream you've had?
Ever?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I don't think that can be aired. I have a recurring dream that fucks me up.
Pray tell.
So I'm running in the woods.
Oh, shit.
But I can't run with any sort of pace. I mean, I've got no pace anyway. I'm not a fast man. But like in the woods, I can't run. And I end up going on all fours trying to run. And it's like I'm in quicksand and can't move.
Bounding.
And opposite me within the woods, I can see this fucking huge tonkass wolf. Like looking at me opposite, like running towards me.
Like a dog soldier wolf, tall, standing up or on all fours.
Like big dog, wolf, giant, man, creature, demon, dog, wolf dream. And it's chasing me and I'm doing all I can to get away, but I can hardly move and I'm trying to run. And it slowly gets closer and closer towards me. And then I always wake up just before the cunt gets my face.
Jesus.
And I normally wake up with a scream and a jolt, but I've had that dream for years.
Jesus.
You probably see someone, right?
Yeah. My worst dream was making wetty with my sister.
I'm proud that you shared that. I knew that answer because we've discussed it before. And I was like, I'm not going to ask you because you might be put in a position where I know that you got sister wetty. And if you said anything else, I'd be sitting there going, that's not what you told me. But you offered it up. You offered it up on your own, and that's growth.
What makes me laugh is if you tell someone that, they say you're sick. I'm like, it's part of subconscious. It's not something I've been championing when I'm awake. I can't help what happens in my dreams. I've kissed my dad in my dreams. It's the things you don't want to happen, isn't it? You don't want to be chased by a wolf in the woods. I don't want to make wetty with sis.
But I won't give anything away, but Harry has two sisters, and I know the sister that you chose, and one sister is remarkably more attractive than the other. That's no diss. Why are you looking at me? You just said you had a dream about shagging your sister. What? And I'm just saying your subconscious has picked the right choice. That's all I'm saying.
We're going to have a whole meeting about how the fuck that can stay in this episode.
Well, it can.
How can it? What if this is the time when mama, papa decide it's time to support our son and listen to this?
Yeah.
And then,
but they know what sister would be as well.
Jesus.
Both your sisters would know what sister it would be. Come on, man. Don't be unreasonable. This stays in the episode.
It's a dream. There's not like a benefit from either of them being it. I wouldn't be like, oh, that one's better looking. It makes it easier.
Yeah, but no. Your subconscious had a choice between McDonald's and a la carte, and it chose the a la carte. So your subconscious is doing the right thing, is all I'm saying, all right?
Yeah.
Anyway, any more likes for me?
Just the Europop music during Paprika's entrance made me want to change my name to Longinus, move to 1988's Berlin and open a neon-lit bar called All Hours.
Can I join you?
Yes.
Can my name be Devante?
Devante and Longinus.
Yes, please.
1988 Berlin.
Yeah.
Neon lights.
The music was great in this one, to be fair. Credit where credit's due. I did like the music. It was just wild.
Yeah.
Just upbeat.
It was a bit mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you done with your likes?
Yeah.
Are you sulking about the sister talk? I'll go on to what I liked about it. And the first and foremost thing was just it's unique. Paprika is inventive, immersive, and has its own very unique brand of storytelling. And I, for one, applaud any film that has its own individual identity. I guess the highest praise I can give a film like this is I've never seen anything like it before, which isn't necessarily true because of Inception, but Inception came after it. Paprika is an ambitious, high-concept animation that is great to look at and fun to escape into. Now, whatever you have to say about feeling lost in translation, about not feeling connected, about it being too random and mad and chaotic, I do like it when a film is immersive and takes you into a completely different world. Whether I understand that world is a different matter, but I did like swimming in that ocean, I guess.
It's unique to be born without eyes, but I'm not sitting there saying, oh, it's wicked. That was so cool to not be born with eyes.
Yeah, but it's, you can't say that it's not ambitious, and you can't say that it is mad.
So I can
it's fun,
say that.
It's fun to look into a director's mind and see that that's what he's churning out. I think.
The animation's great to look at.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's got it doesn't hold the cards over some 88 Ghibli stuff in terms of animation. I wasn't blown away. I think the most unique thing about the animation was it danced between 3D and 2D in points.
Yeah.
Like when it looks down a tunnel and when the camera moves through a shot in an animation, that was kind of strange. It's really trippy, actually, to jump from 2D to 3D animation mid-film.
Yeah.
A part of me wondered if they went back and inserted that, like in a special edition, like Lucas used to do with Star Wars. I wondered if it was anything along them lines, because I thought very odd to jump between different mediums mid-film. But unique? I don't know, man.
I mean, yes,
it's unique, but is that a good thing?
I think it is, because I watch so many films that are so straight down the middle. Like, you know exactly what the beginning, middle and end is going to be. Your Netflix originals, your straight to streaming films, your generic thrillers, or your raunchy comedies, or your rom-coms. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get. I think the highest praise for Paprika for me is I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I started, and I still don't really have a clue what went on after I finished it. And I like that. I like being surprised. Was it a good surprise? It was a unique surprise, I'd say.
Unique surprise?
I think.
Like green poo.
That would be a unique surprise, and you would need to seek medical attention.
Not if you eat cupcakes that have way too much blue food colouring in them. Your shit will go green.
Blue would make your shit green.
Blue makes your shit green. So if you have a cupcake,
why wouldn't it make your poo go green if it was green?
Put a little more. No, blue makes your poo green. Don't ask me about that. I've not gone.
it's just fact.
Yeah, I've not gone down and figured out the science. But have a cupcake, fill it with way too much blue food colouring, you will have green poo.
Yeah.
Fact. Send in the photos to confirm.
Yeah. We'd love to see them.
Yeah.
I also liked how the film goes straight into the spice. Paprika immediately throws you into this absurd world where reality and dreams are melded into a mad blur of frenzied what the fuckery. It's a film that you have to just strap yourself in and enjoy the ride. And I liked the fact there was little to no exposition. The audience, we're just kind of thrown headfirst into this acid trip fever dream of confusion and chaos. And I kind of liked the manic nature of the film. I don't know, I was just there for it. I was just there to just sit down. The first time I watched it, I was hungover. I just sit down on my own, just press play. And it was just an onslaught on the senses. And I just kind of liked that. It was just madness happening on screen. And I enjoyed it.
I think it's fair to say that you love anarchy. And I think when a film shows social norms and governments falling apart because it's just all madness, I think you like it. I think you kind of would love to see people lose it and lose their routine, lose their jobs, and just fall into some weird dreamscape. You're an anarchist.
Some people, Mr. Wayne, just like to see the world burn. That's me.
Remember, I told you a story about a man that drowned. Yeah, you said it was like going home. No, it bloody hurt. Something.
I think that's me, Dan. Oh, no, I've got one more, that's anime awareness. I'm not well-versed in the world of anime, but I am intrigued by both the medium and the genre and would like to absorb more. I like the fact that I watched a film like Paprika, so I can add it to my list of completed Asian animation films.
Mm-hmm.
I know I only dipped my toe into the fantastic sea of Studio Ghibli the year before last. And since then, I've sort of saved them for around the festive period. It helps me with winter blues. I find they're so immersive, the look and the feel of them.
Yeah.
So I was interested to see almost like an adult version of that world where they explore more mature themes. Now, every Ghibli film I've seen is superior to Paprika. It's worth saying that. But I do like that I'm building up my repertoire of those sort of films.
But there is madness in Ghibli as well. So if you watch My Neighbor Totoro, there's a cat bus.
Mad big cat bus.
There's a cat bus and it turns up and it's insane and they roll across the hills and weird things are happening. But it runs concurrently alongside a story about children grieving for the potential loss of their mum. So I can deal with the madness when the lines are separate.
Madness with motive is easier to digest.
And they can cross lines a few times in the film. Of course, yeah. But when you blur the lines too much, it's insanity.
I think Ghibli is mad, but there is always a moral of the story in a Ghibli film. And I think they're great brain food for young minds because they teach so much. Like you say, they've all got deeper rooted meanings. And when a film's well-intentioned and they blur that line between being well-intentioned and having a purpose and being crazy, that's when it hits right. When it's just crazy, it's not as palatable, I'd say.
Mm.
What didn't you like about Paprika?
So similar to the point I was just making, actually. So I like distinct lines. And for me, when you blur them lines of reality constantly in a film, you lose what could have been a good story to the impenetrable obscurity. Hell for me is watching this again.
Okay. Okay.
Or Everything Everywhere.
Okay.
It's I take nothing from them.
You don't vibe with this tribe?
I don't. It's not to say I don't appreciate the animation. I don't appreciate the, you know, the visualization. So a guy sitting there thinking like, you know, face on a television and like dolls come into life and that. And that's wonderful. But I think storylines sacrificed at the expense of madness.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious from what we've been speaking about so far that I like this more than you. But I will say that it's fucking work to watch this film.
Yeah.
It is a lot.
It's the longest hour and a half since Everything Everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is 2:10.
Yeah. I mean, both of what you just said bleed into both of my dislikes, well, two of my three dislikes. And like you, it's just a bit much. As I stated in my likes, I enjoyed the wild ride and randomness of Paprika. Like you, though, I found the film too difficult to follow and I thought the voices were too shrill and the madness was a little too manic for me. And I differ to you, as I appreciated the experience, but I did find myself questioning if I could be asked to keep trying to keep up with the Guanings for most of this.
Guanings?
So I do, I get exactly what you're saying there. Like, it is an effort. It was an effort to watch this. It was less of an effort second time round because I knew a bit more what was going on and it was easier to track on the second viewing. But this being said, both times was a slog. And like you, I didn't like how a short runtime of 90 minutes seemed to drag. I think this is a result of Paprika being a bit too much of an attack on the senses, but an hour and a half runtime felt more like over 2 hours. I wouldn't say I was bored, but there was large parts of the film where I was getting restless. This might be a me issue, but if a short film feel like long film, it problem.
I think you're much better. You've got the correct tools to tackle a film like this. You're well equipped because of the amount of films you put away. So it's fair to say you watch about three times as many films as I do in a year.
If anyone's interested, I keep a note of how many films I've watched in a year. And last year, 2023, I watched 197.
All new watches?
Not all new watches.
Oh, yeah, because obviously some would have been podcast and stuff. Understandable. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of films.
That's an addiction, mate. That's a problem.
Yeah. Whereas I think I've always said it, I'm extremely picky with films. I'm that prick that thinks, no, that's a good wine and that one ain't. Just because it's sideways.
You like what you know and you know what you like.
I know, but the problem with me is I would rather watch a film I know won't let me down three times than watch a film I'm quite positive I will hate.
You would rather know that you're spending 2 hours of your life on something that's going to nourish you rather than taking a punt and feeling, well, that was a fucking waste of time.
Yeah, it's like,
I respect that.
It's like going to the restaurant you love the most, which is a trait I hate about myself because I love trying new things. Always love trying new things. Yeah. If I'm in Germany, I will only eat German food, German beer.
Yes.
I won't be, I'll go to McDonald's or anything like that. I'll always try when in Rome.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same with that, yeah.
Yeah, so, but when I'm in my home.
Yeah.
I do what I want.
I get that. And yeah. I respect that. I do respect that. Because there's, like I said earlier, I've been stung by so many fucking shit films or bang average films that I've either seen people praising or I thought, oh, I don't know, I'll just give this one a punt because it's new. And then afterwards I've been like, I could have watched Shawshank. I could have watched Green Mile. I could have watched any Tarantino film. I could have explored an Alfred Hitchcock or a Stanley Kubrick film that I haven't seen and build up my repertoire.
Yeah, I'd rather do that.
Yeah, but I don't. I take a punt on the new and shiny thing, and I'd say more often than not, I'm left disappointed. So I do. I think that's why we work as a podcast. Self-suck incoming.
Well, what you said there is perfect for me. So if I say I love an Alfred Hitchcock film, but there's one I haven't seen, I'd much rather sit down, complete his catalogue, watch a film that I'm quite, because I love the director, even if it's a bang average film or actually bad film, it expands my knowledge of a director I like.
Yes.
I get to learn more about him, where he probably went a bit south. A film that's got a masterclass following of fans that say it's the greatest animation ever made, but I can't penetrate the story. I'm like the sperm that didn't make it into the egg.
Yeah.
I just died and then fell out. Oh, God.
That stays.
And some cunt out there now is walking around and, you know, getting milk and being cuddled.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I'm still there in...
I do... listen, any film you watch is a commitment. And I know that might sound wanky to some, but it is. You're deciding to spend hours of your life trying to absorb whatever someone else has made.
That's big.
I think there's an art in that.
That's good.
I think that shows respect and I think it shows appreciation, all of these wonderful things. But you can't help but feel like you've been left out of a party if at the end you're going, well, I don't know what that was. So that was a 2-hour waste of my life. I could have done something so much better with that time. And there is that air of, I guess, when you feel left out of something, it sucks in everyday life. Why wouldn't it when you're watching something or listening to something?
I don't necessarily want to be a part of a crowd just because it exists. Like someone sees a group of... group of lads in a bar and having a great time, but they're not my type of people. I'm not going to sit there and be like FOMO, like they're having a great time. I'm sitting there on my own reading a book, having a Guinness. I wish I could join them. I don't wish I could join them.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
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 That's good. More dislikes for me, please.
Himuro is a nonce child molester.
Here we go.
And it's not even brought up or questioned in the film.
Here we go.
He has a magazine in his pedo apartment that says hard boys, sex, and a drawing of a man and a prepubescent boy. There's no dialogue to register or check that behaviour that it's been seen or that it even exists or that he's a nonce. And I actually think it's something to do with the culture. So this is true. This is true. So child pornography was only made illegal in Japan in 2014.
What?
This film came out in 2006.
Wait, what?
That's true.
It was only illegal. It was only made became it illegal in
2014.
10 years ago, you could get child pornography.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking hell.
It has an issue of soft paedophilia. Everyone knows this. All the schoolgirl things.
Well, yeah, that is something I've seen a lot in Asian cinema. Yeah, yeah. They've got this odd, it seems to be a societal obsession with schoolgirls, vulnerable schoolgirls.
It's like, a huge...
And that's always been an issue for me watching a lot of Asian cinema.
Well, it's a huge industry out there. Absolutely huge. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it wasn't until 2014 that it was made illegal, but it's called soft paedophilia. So they have there's catalogues of minors in bikinis.
What?
And it still sells as like books and stuff. Boys, girls. It's real. There's a full articles on it. You can read about it. This isn't obviously everyone in Japan, but it's one of the few countries that can sell a book where kids are in bikinis.
So that it's mad you say that, because in the context of the film, you sort of have a glance at this scene you say. So there's a image of, they go into someone's apartment that's missing, and in his apartment, he's got this magazine on the side that says Hard Boys, and it's got a topless, what looks like prepubescent boy on there with a man that looks suspect at least. And they sort of look at it and then move forward. If that film was made here, if that was an English film or a Western film, I think there would have been a lot more time given to the fact that that's wrong, that looks dodgy. But if you're saying to me that this was of a time before it was made illegal, the fact that they just brush past it like it's not an issue speaks volumes, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the point. There's for them to put it in the shot and for a character to register it, it means that he disagrees with it. But legally and politically at the time, it wasn't an offence. You weren't committing a crime.
That is fucking mental. And yeah. I never knew that.
There's an exceptional BBC article I read on it. Really interesting. And this journalist interviews a photographer in Japan who says he makes £30,000-£40,000 by taking soft porn photos of like kids. So soft porn, no nudity, promiscuous poses and photos, etc. of kids. He says he makes so much more money on it. And this journalist, Stacey Dooley, she asked the photographer, how would you feel if someone took these photos of your 16-year-old daughter? And he put, I would force us both to commit suicide. And she put, are you serious? And he put, yes.
Jesus.
So even the Kieran Varley did the article, but even the guy taking photos and making money from them knows it's shameful. Because if he applied it to his own daughter, he wouldn't do it. It's insane. It's a really weird thing, but it's always existed. They've got an avenue in Tokyo called like JK Alley or something, and it's where like old businessmen and stuff can go and hold hands with like a 14-year-old schoolgirl, and she'll make a fortune.
Mate, I had no idea that that's a thing. Like, Japan's been on my bucket list of places I've always wanted to go. Because
still on my bucket list.
I've been to China, and it's like a different world. It's so different to what I'm used to. I still want to go to Japan, but now knowing this, I'm a bit like, I've always thought Japan was this almost like superior other. And now I'm like, Japan, you need to sort your shit out. I mean, only 10 years ago, you stopped this shit and there's still very questionable things going on within your society. Sort that shit out.
Well, when I say the culture thing, so if you look at like Hello Kitty and anime and stuff, it's all suggestive, isn't it? It's got vibes to it. There's always that questionable, big question mark, like, oh, that cartoon, she looks kind of young. And the noises, like I've always thought the noises are a bit off.
Yeah.
Like, oi! Oh! Yeah. It's like, whoa, hold on.
Why did I like those noises you make?
I'm not saying this isn't Japan as a whole. This is an industry within Japan that makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's called soft paedophilia for a reason, which is a terrible thing to say. Yeah. Soft paedophilia sounds awful, but it's not like a Jimmy Savile jumps out of a closet, grabs one and runs off.
No, but even...
It's like a strange appreciation for prepubescent in a bikini.
Even conference league paedophilia is awful. I know obviously you have Premier League paedophilia, which is abhorrent, but even if it's really minimal, but if it's still created for the same purposes, for pedos to get their pickles milked, then I still have a massive fucking problem with it.
Jesus.
I do have a massive problem, and you are so right, especially in today's in this world we live in this day and age. It's worth saying again and again and again, we're not saying that that's Japan as a whole. It's a very small percentage of Japan.
If someone asked me today, you're going to die, there's one country you can go to, it'd be Japan.
Yeah, I think I'd be there with you, mate.
I adore Japan. I think everything about it is incredible. They've got incredible history, their culture, the way they treat a garden, the way they look at life, incredible. I'm just saying that there is this little industry within Japan that makes billions of pounds off of probably objectifying children.
And that's the fucking problem.
Well, that's why I don't like it in this film. It's clever because they show you something that the director obviously frowns upon. And at the time, it wasn't illegal. He frowns upon it because he shows you in the foreground this magazine that says hard boys, sex, and then it's a man and a boy. And and one of the characters looks at it like, Himuro was a bit off.
Yeah.
But there's no dialogue to follow up. So it would have been nice if the character that registered the soft porn to be like, he had some dodgy tastes, and then for another person to say, you know, to register it.
Yeah.
They don't register it.
The fact that it's so nonchalant, like it's a nothing event, is a bit problematic, I think.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a cultural thing in terms of it's like, say in a country where they still eat dogs, to us it's shocking, but they got a point. Why is it okay for us to battery kill chickens and pigs and cows, but we can't skin a dog alive? You know, you get my point.
I do get your point, but I love dogs,
of course.
But in its sincerest form, like, you're right. Why is it okay to eat that animal and not that animal? You're totally right. Like,
it's the skinning that's the issue.
Yeah, well,
you can humanely kill something and eat it, but they do that could be a bit different. Skin an animal is disgusting. So I don't know. It could be a cultural phenomenon where we're just well beyond ever thinking that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, But Tony have been made illegal in 2014 is kind of insane.
I mean, that's eye-opening to me. Well, that I had no idea.
That literally gutted the BBC when they started finding in all, you know, Operation Yew Tree, the amount of nonsense. Talking of Premier League pedos, it probably is something like the BBC.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So many have come out of there, graduated.
I think, yeah, I think your dislike there, that would certainly align with mine. Like, it was just so blasé. Like, I didn't, I mean, you sent me a message saying, did I clock that? In a film so mad, that's just full of madness and chaos, the decision to put in that troubling sort of tiny little bit of animation in and then completely ignore it is a bit like, whoa.
Yeah, they never like, do what, a deep dive into Himuro.
Like, either, like, talk about that, the fact that that guy's at very base level problematic, probably a lot worse, or don't include it at all.
But that's what I mean. This film was out in 2006.
Yeah.
So it was a good 10 years.
Ain't nothing but a thing back then.
Yeah, it was more like, I suppose what you could liken it to in England is fox hunting. So fox hunting is an age-old tradition in England, and it's brutal. They literally send bloodhounds after foxes to tear them to pieces, and you've got the posh aristocracy of England chasing them down in a fucking ice cream outfit.
It's disgusting.
And it's for sport.
Yeah.
They make out it's for pest control. It's not. It's pest control does not need you to wear a 19th century petticoat and a helmet and have a little shot of port.
Yeah.
But through outrage, it's been, you know, it has been made illegal, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it's only used now in very unique circumstances.
Yeah.
So through outrage, it happens. So this part in the film is a nod towards maybe the times are changing. They're going to change. And they did in 2014. But it's still, you know, they're still sexualized.
Yeah.
Minors are still sexualized in Japan.
Oh, that's a hefty one to take, isn't it?
Well, I said I'd come armed.
You did.
And if I can knife the film to death, I will.
Okay. Any more dislikes? Shall I go on to my last one?
No, I'll finish on the child pornography. I think that's
okay.
Fine.
Finish strong, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. What the last thing I didn't like about the film was Paprika gave me COVID.
What? But
you heard me.
I gave you COVID. No, I gave you COVID in the wall pack.
Shh.
We had loads of Guinness.
No, shush, shush.
And I'd all,
let I, me finish my point.
Okay.
Maybe this film was so mad, so chaotic, and so hard to follow that it triggered a strange reaction in my body that triggered the dreaded coronavirus. Oh. Maybe it didn't. Maybe I'm saying it did just to share with the group that I got COVID for the very first time. Either way, I will forever associate this film with my COVID origin story, and that good sir is a negative.
It's not a negative. That sounds like it was a part of this film.
It could have been, couldn't it? It's just one of those films, you know, when you watch films when you're younger and you might be off school sick and you have a hot chocolate and cozy down and watching a film at Christmas. This film, when if anyone ever speaks about the film, well, I think two things now. I think about the seriously problematic subculture that was in Japan that only sort of tried to get thwarted in 2014 and the fact that I got heavily fallen by COVID. That's the two things I will think about when I think about Paprika. And in a film that's so mad and so out there, that's what I'm going to think about.
So it's
kind of crazy.
It's left a mad mark on you.
It has, yeah.
Really?
It has, yeah.
Yeah. I'll always associate COVID with getting knocked out of, was it the Euros or was it the World Cup? I think it was the Euros.
Well,
that was 2020, wasn't it? Yeah.
Of both.
Yeah, I know, but it was during the height of COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in the basement. I think we scored first against Italy. Was it Italy? I can't remember. But either way, I got COVID whilst watching England play football.
And you'll always associate that with that, yeah.
Yeah, if I even if England are playing now, I'm like, I can't taste anything.
Yeah, even when I was watching Paprika for the second time yesterday, I was like, does my throat hurt? Is it happening again? Is the rewatch going to give me the vid?
The film was irritating your immune system, mate.
Yeah, it was. It is bloody chaotic. I've got some questions.
Mm.
Did Paprika make you want to explore more movies from the medium, or did it make you go the other way and encourage you to stay away from anime?
Not all anime is mad, though, is it? Some of it tracks.
The only anime I've seen has been quite mad. Now that's I'm totally aware that could be as a result of me not seeing a great deal, but all that I've seen is Studio Ghibli and Paprika, so they're my only reference points, and they've all been a little bit mental, mate.
See, I didn't know if anime is a unique category, and then because there's lots of different ones, isn't
there? You're probably right.
There's martial arts anime. There's all different names for the Japanese categories.
I've probably misgenred it.
I don't know if I don't know. I'm not into that. So I don't want the big meta. I confuse the fuck out of you. But I've always my door will always be open for Japanese animation.
It's cuddly comfort when it's at its best.
Love it, especially if it's period drama. Like not period drama, but like set in, you know, like feudal Japan, wherever wherever massive fascination.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's fair enough. I think when it's a genre I don't know a lot about, and it's one that I feel like as a film fan, as a cinephile, I should probably watch more. It does make me want to explore more. But then it also, on the other hand, if someone said, oh, watch this anime film, it's just as mad as Paprika, I'd be like, I'm going to need a year.
How could it be?
I'm going to need a while to get over this. Now, if anyone has got any anime recommendations, get in touch. I do want to watch more of them, but maybe less spicy than Paprika.
Yeah. That's a good...
Yeah.
Good wordplay.
Which director or movie star's dreams would you like to peek into and why?
Leos Carax.
Oh, hello there, good sir.
So I could knife him.
Oh, goodbye, good sir.
Yeah. No, so if I look into his dreams...
Better understand the monster.
Well, yeah, I'd wonder, because I think he puts his dreams into film, or he lies to us that he does that.
So would you want to explore to see if you could, if there is an explanation for his films in his subconscious, or would you want to go in just to see what his fucking problem was?
I'd like to disprove him.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to disprove him.
As is your right.
I reckon his dreams are so arbitrary, so boring. Yeah. I reckon he's sitting there just like tying knots, doing rope knots, and that's all that's happening. And there's a sheep going, meh, meh. Oh no, shit, I'm justifying his films.
Don't ever do that.
Nah, never.
Never, ever, ever. Would you rather have the exact same dream every night for the rest of your life or never have a single dream ever again?
Oh, I suppose if I had the exact same dream every night, I'd give it credence. I'd put value to it. I'd be like, why am I dreaming this? And then I'd go on a quest.
A specific quest related to the dream or just...
Well, I could inception it and go on a mental quest and try and find the root of the dream.
So you would try to trick the only dream you have into giving you more dream to understand it.
I would become its dream.
What?
Because just like Paprika,
you've got meta.
Dreams merge and they blend, and then no one knows what's corporeal anymore. No one knows what's tangible, intangible. I'd make the dream of me.
Whoa. Wow.
See how nonsense that is.
Yeah. But have you ever been able to manipulate a dream mid-dream? Have you ever been in that sort of sleeping state where the dream's going one way and in your head you're like, oh no, I'm going to go this way and sort of steer your narrative?
I have.
Do you know what I mean?
But not on... So if... Let's say it's a raunchy dream and it's with...
Your sister.
Yeah. The good-looking one. So cold. Let's say it's 1992 Nicole Kidman. And I think the dream's going in a direction where it's going to be an amazing dream. That dream, I can't ever follow through. She walks off and I don't get to do what I wanted. And then I wake up. But the dreams where I'm being punched in the dick by an ISIS member, I've literally had this dream.
That's amazing.
The only reason I think they're ISIS is because during the videos of all of the fucking beheadings and all the killings, I started having dreams.
Okay.
And they were masked and they were so much stronger than me. Kind of like your running dream. You can't run fast enough.
Yeah.
So in my dream, my punches were like bags of sand. No, that would still hurt. They were air. I could do nothing. And they'd be punching me in the balls. And you know what I was doing in my sleep? Because I'd wake up in sweats like, oh my God. And I had to like jump out of my dream. I literally jumped out of my dream. I was squeezing my own balls.
Oh.
And that's why I was dreaming it.
Huh.
And the news filled in the gaps and populated the NPCs. Yeah.
Mad.
I don't even know if I answered your question.
I don't remember what the question was, mate. I was so captivated in whatever the fuck that was that I don't even know.
Nicole Kidman, ISIS, my sisters.
Balls squeezing, ball punching.
Yep.
Makes total sense. I'd say it makes more sense than Paprika.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you rate Paprika out of 10? I don't know, man. I feel like you're going to go low. If I reckon this is a low scoring dog for you.
I'll never watch it again.
Okay.
Which is
I think that's a given.
Yeah, but there's some films that I adore that I'll never watch again because they're too much on the soul, like Son of Saul or
Yeah.
Schindler's I will watch again. I love Schindler's. I think it's masterful animation. I think it is really clever, the jumping between 2D, 3D, the colours, how much is going on in an animation. You've got to remember, animation 2006, there's still an element of drawing.
Yeah, of course.
It's to conceptualise it, it's look how long it takes. Mm. So it is masterful animation, but stone cold kill me dead story.
Mm.
A 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep saying okay. I mean, that's, listen,
it
like we said, exactly, you are, if not consistent. Mm-hmm. And like I said, one of the first thing I said when this episode started, if I'd known the film was this, I wouldn't have put you through it. Because I would, like 10 minutes into this, I was like, he's not going to have a good time.
No.
It's just not your cup of tea.
You know me.
And that's fair enough.
If someone, and when people want to take that fight to me and say, you just didn't watch it, you didn't understand it, my answer to you is, before you waste the effort, I don't want to understand it.
There you go.
I have no interest.
So if they're trying to fight you, they're fighting an unarmed man, which is immoral and wrong, because you're not willing to fight.
You're whipping a dead horse.
You are.
I'm gone. I'm already down the road watching better films than you.
Don't waste your fucking time coming for Harry with Paprika.
But
you just let you punch him.
Please do, because any press is good press.
We do. Yes, we do want you to talk to us, because we're quite lonely here.
Yes.
I'd go a bit higher. Shock.
Mm-hmm.
I would give it a 6. And I know, like, I think yours is low. You're going to think that's high. But for my likes, it's for that reason. I think you summed it up perfectly. I do like a bit of chaos. I do like a bit of anarchy. And if nothing else, that film did transport me into like a mad, chaotic animated film where, yeah, I didn't understand it. But did I have a good time? Kind of did. Did I understand it? Kind of didn't.
I think in a world of film fans and ISIS, I think you'd pick ISIS over film fans tracking you down and hitting you. And that's why you gave it a 6.
You think so?
The film fans are nuts.
They are a bit much.
They are severe. They're one step away from radicalising and arming themselves.
I mean, I've been on the old social media writing about films before we did this podcast, and I had some very, very unnecessary messages for my opinion on films. And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm not attacking you and your family. I'm saying the thing that we both watched, I had a different opinion on it. Stand down, calm down, go and have a warm cup of milk and go to sleep. You're being silly.
Oh, Black Panther 2 was excellent. It deserves an Oscar.
It wasn't.
Angela Bassett deserves an Oscar.
She didn't.
For a superhero film, a sequel. Wah!
And I think I've said it before on this podcast, I was in Black Panther Wakanda Forever for about the same time as Angela Bassett was. She was hardly in it. So she doesn't deserve, if she deserves an Oscar for it, I do. There we go. We can have people attack us for Paprika and Black Panther as well.
Anyone could spot you in that film. The nervous guy on the left that drank too much coffee and needs a toilet.
That's me. That gives Paprika a total score of 9.5 out of 20.
Good.
If you like your animation to be adult, audacious and absolutely fucking mental, or if you've ever wanted to see an Inception origin story that makes Nolan's version seem like a diet dream depiction, then Paprika could be a film for you.
Excellent.
Paprika is available to stream on Netflix. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Akira, Ghost in the Shell and Perfect Blue.
Give it a name, give it a name, give it a name now. We birth a plot and then make a trailer. What the plot?
Action!
So for the purpose of you, really, I'm trying to trim down the length of my what the plot ideas.
By giving a lengthy introduction.
Yes, I'm going meta. A la Paprika.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm giving an extra long message saying I'm shortening my What the Plots.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go.
Thank you.
Here's my shorter version of What the Plot.
Cheers. And I want to...
Commencing...
I want to thank you for doing that, because by telling me that, it means that you care about me.
Yeah.
You care about the podcast.
I do. I'm considerate. I'm trying to be considerate.
Thanks, man. It's so...
Right. So, a high-profile celebrity stalker who was cleared of stalking a superstar of the entertainment industry, has reached a bizarre level of infamy after being endearing and charismatic in a very public court case. Attractive, endearing, and popular despite being obviously a little unhinged, this troubled individual gets a stalker of his own.
So it's an actor? Who is it? Do it again.
I'm trying to make it shorter, bro. I'm reading it again. So basically, there's this stalker who is stalking a superstar of the entertainment industry.
Yes.
Right. He's, people seem to love this guy, a la Ted Bundy. He's good looking. He's endearing. He's funny. He's charismatic. He's all these things. He gets cleared and gets an odd level of infamy and attention on social media and stuff because he's this very, he's this very likable dude, even though it's strong suggestions that he's been stalking someone, which is just a bit creepy and a bit, you just don't do it. He then gets a stalker of his own. So it's like a taste of your own medicine.
That's why I had to hear it again, because it's a bit meta. So because it's, because I heard a guy's it getting done for stalking and then get stalked, I was like, oh wait, hold on, wait, what did he say?
It's stalker squared.
It's stalker squared.
It's your classic stalker becomes stalky.
I like that, because I'd like to see what it does to him as a character. Would he, can you imagine if he was the best hypocrite on earth and was like, this person won't leave me alone?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
And I think if the way I see the film, this guy is guilty of stalking, but the way he's done it so cleverly that he was, it couldn't be proven. People aren't saying, well, he clearly didn't do it. People are saying, can't prove that he did it. But he's also this really lovable. He's like a sociopath. Like, he mirrors emotions and stuff. So he's been following this celebrity, movie star, director, TikTok, famous cunt, whoever it is, been following him, but couldn't be proved in a court of law. Then through having loads, because it's a huge superstar, let's say, because of all that coverage that comes with that, he gets like almost a weird following and fan base, and he gets a stalker of his own.
That's cool.
Now, that can be another man. It can be a female. The only thing I have is that the guy that's now becoming stalked is a dude. That's all I've got.
Yep. I think this the huge celebrity star is faceless.
Yeah.
I think the film starts and all they are is silhouettes on like hero posters
exactly,
and stuff. It's just spoken about.
Exactly, yeah. It's not the main focal point of the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I really, for some reason, what's really standing out for me is that I would like it when that second person goes to court for their stalking. That it's just an infinite circle. It's just, it never stops.
Oh, and then the stalker, the stalker of the one that got accused and found innocent, then also gets the stalker.
What does that speak to? It speaks to Z-list celebrities. It speaks to YouTube personalities.
Okay.
It's like fame at any cost, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like you don't even have to do anything anymore. You don't have to actually have any talent.
Yeah.
But to actually be famous, to become a millionaire, you can literally put a camera on yourself now and film yourself watching something and just react to it. I'm not saying that you're not funny and you lack charisma, but where's the skill?
Yeah.
Where's the talent?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that's why it would be an interesting, it's like this person's becoming a celebrity because they stalked a celebrity.
Yeah.
So you're a celebrity by proxy or by some sort of venereal disease. You followed someone, it made you famous.
Exactly. I mean, you look at Ted Bundy in the 70s when he was on trial, like he was his own lawyer and stuff, and he got, like, he had fans. When he was in prison, he had women writing to him, like declaring their unconditional love to him. These people exist. People do get obsessed with wrong-uns.
Yeah.
Whether or not this wrong-un's proved to be a wrong-un or not, it doesn't matter. If this person's on in court making the judge laugh, making the jury laugh, the person, the victim in this is the person he's originally stalking, but people are forgetting that because he's so charismatic.
But that's the vicious cycle, isn't it, of being fame hungry and stuff. So there are, it's recorded history, and not specifically targeting women in this, but women have been known to contact and try and marry known serial killers.
It's just mad.
Child killers.
It's mad, yeah.
And then they start fighting their corner, their case, their innocence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're in front of the camera. It becomes a joke for them.
Yeah.
And then we want to interview the nut job who wants to marry a serial killer.
Exactly that, yeah.
And it doesn't end.
Yeah.
It goes around in circles.
That's the idea I've had here. You've got the initial guy who was a stalker becoming stalked, but being stalked by someone who's even more menacing and dangerous than him.
Ooh.
Not this one isn't charismatic, charming. This one's like, fucking hell, he or she is a fucking problem. So it's just, yeah, I like the idea. It's like a vicious circle, continuous stalking. I love that. That's trippy as fuck. Like, then this one that's now doing the stalking gets cleared, and then they get another stalker. It just never stops. A loop, a stalking loop.
Yes, I like. At first, I was thinking young people, but I don't think so. I think these actors need to be older for them to have lived a little, for them to stalk. Stalkers, and I like the thought of them being a bit older.
Okay.
Because they've probably lived a life. They've probably been married. They've been divorced. Because of their crazy personality, they have to have lived a life to be a stalker. I know you can obviously get the young boys and girls that faint because their favourite pop stars come out of somewhere. Of course, but it usually takes an adult to stalk. If you think about it, you need a car, you need money.
And it's someone that's built up an obsession.
Mm.
And it's a compulsion. They can't stop it. They have to be near this person.
Oh, fuck, I love it.
Yeah.
I want, as director, Mary Harron, who did American Psycho.
Yes.
Because it was funny, the pace was brilliant, and I think she can do the serious aspects of stalking,
yeah,
but also hit us with some laughs.
Yeah. Dark comedy, safe to say.
Dark comedy. I'm going to go with Primary Stalker because I think it will be a funny film, but also have some dark undertones. I want to go with John Turturro.
Oh, okay.
Me like him.
You can see him being charismatic.
Yes.
But you can also see there's some menace behind that eyes.
Well, he's funny, isn't he? Yeah. Everything he's done with the Coens, it's funny. His fucking bowling personality in Big Lebowski. Yeah. Oh, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
Barton Fink?
Yes.
I like John Turturro, and I could see him being a very... Because, you know, you could easily dress that guy up and make him look a bit like a loner, bit of a stalker.
He's certainly full of character. You would look at him and you could certainly see him in that, almost performing in a courtroom.
Definitely.
Being like, well, you can't prove anything. Like, sure, she's lovely, but what can you prove? And being like, but there's charm there. He's an older dude, but he's quite a striking looking guy. And I can see why women would find him attractive.
Clean shaven. He appears tall. He may not be, but he looks tall, clean shaven.
Holds himself well.
Brill creamed hair, looking a bit smart, but he's not like, because I think there's an element of, if you're good looking, the crime's not as bad. So I think if it was some stunning Hemsworth dude, the comedy would never track.
They've got to have an air of like, oh shit, he's charming, but he let his guard down there. He's a bit of a fucking, he could be a real wrong one. That's great casting. I'm a fan of that.
And as a pig man, you know, if a beautiful, stunning woman was stalking you, you're not exactly going to go to the police, are you, Adam?
No,
are you, Adam?
I'd reverse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think... The excitement in stalking is that they don't want you to want them.
But
I think being pig men makes it different. So I do not want him to be like this universally good-looking toned man. I want him to be someone who's a bit weathered.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know...
Charming, though.
Well, otherwise the person he's stalking might potentially...
Welcome it. Yeah, yeah.
And we don't want them to welcome it.
No.
Yes, we want them to just be a little glimpse at the start of the film, disappear into...
Yeah, yeah.
Because the real story starts when... the stalker gets stalked, which is great because he gets out of prison, he's feeling better about himself, he's got his little side hustles, and then he starts to see something at the corner of his eye, that person following me and stuff.
Yeah.
Starts getting letters through his door and that.
And it's effectively a taste of your own medicine.
Yes.
His noise outside, is it them?
Yeah.
Someone bumps into him, fuck, is it them? Like, and he realises the impact of what he's done on the person that he was doing to, but it's too late because... As bad as he was, this person, whoever it is stalking him, fucking 10 times worse.
And that stalker could potentially have been in the courtroom watching him and be like, and then send him letters like, I loved how you evaded the questioning on day two.
Yeah, yeah. I see that as well, yeah.
And he's like that.
Yeah.
So I want to go similar. I want to go similar for what I see as the female counterpart now stalking a la Barton Fink. I'm thinking Frances McDormand because she's had experience in dark comedies with Three Billboards, and Barton and Turturro has had it in Coen Brothers. So they've both been exposed to comedy drama, and I think because of they're the older breed of actors, neither of them are what people call universally attractive. So I think she's got the tools to pull off a brilliant performance where she can be almost like a Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction, kind of alarming, but funny as well.
Kathy Bates, a la Misery as well.
Yeah.
She just basically wants him.
Yes.
Captive because she's besotted with him. He's stalking might have been through fascination of the person, whoever it's stalking, but we never find out what that is. her stalking obsession, I see now that you've put Frances McDormand, is literally she wants to own him. She wants him as almost like a pet. So while he's what he was doing as a stalker, terrible. No one should have to go through that. It's unsettling. It's disgusting, horrible, abhorrent behaviour. No one should do it. Mm-hmm. But he was never proven to do it, and he never did anything that sinister. She, on the other hand, is full fat stalker, dirty fucking
yes.
Run. That's how I see it.
I like.
Yeah.
I'm down. What comes to mind, Shadow was playing a lot in my head.
Oh?
Because it, not that as the full name, I was going to go Shadow Ring.
Okay. In terms of that it's continuous.
Because a ring never ends. Yeah. They keep triggering each other, so it's a ring of shadows. Yeah, ring of shadows.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go. I mean, it sounds like a vampire flick, but I'm going to go Ring of Shadows, starring Frances McDormand, John Turturro, and directed by Mary Harron, who did American Psycho.
I knew I loved John the moment I saw him.
Your Honor, I'm not a bad guy. I just like to walk. It's not my fault that this person was walking on the same day as me on the same path at the same time. See, Your Honor? Look, I got a fan.
There is something very attractive about a man confidently defending himself in a room full of people.
Lady, do I know you?
Not yet, but you will.
Officer, thank God. I need help.
How can I help you? Hey, wait a minute. Ain't you that guy that was following that pretty actress?
Yes, I don't know. This crazy woman, she's been following me for days. She's been following. I need your help.
He doesn't know it yet, but in him following that pretty stupid woman, he's got himself a lifelong follower. I love him. He will love me too. Once he has seen what life would be like with me, he won't want anything